Hey, everybody, Matt, Jess and Dave here.
Sorry, Jess, just butting in quickly to let the listeners know that I'm going to be in Sydney this week, coming up the 8th to the 12th of May, and you can get tickets now via mattshieldcomedy.com, then going straight to Brisbane on the 16th to the 19th. So tickets for my show Dryer Dryer in Sydney and Melbourne.
Sorry, Matt, I'll just cut you off there. I just need to tell everyone that our quiz show, our web series, is out right now. Do go on the quiz show. You can see it on Stupid Old Channel for free on YouTube. Type in "Do Go On The Quiz Show" and you can see three episodes right now covering topics like Google, Queen Victoria, the Olympics, and we got five more episodes coming up. So like and subscribe, whatever that means.
They are big topics too. And I said Sydney and Melbourne. I meant Sydney and Brisbane. Anyway, let's get on with the show.
I'm still here too.
Oh, hey, Jess.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Do Go On with me, Dave Warnocky, and then Matt Stewart and Jess Perkins.
Oh, okay.
How do you do? And then, oh, until you said okay, I didn't realize that he ranked us there, sort of. Is that
no,
what you're okay?
And them.
Oh, them. Okay.
With an M.
Yeah, them. So it's me versus you.
Oh,
two.
He was ranking us.
Seriously, you want to go against us?
I reckon.
You want to go up against? Oh my god! What a fucking idiot! Are
that's
you
real
serious?
Dumb. That's real
you want
dumb.
To go up against us?
Yeah.
We I'm are the assume, sassiest I'm and the assume. Second sassiest people on this podcast.
Jimmy's joking. He can't take on the might of the Sass Twins.
Sass Twins!
Yeah, right. I was bluffing and you called me.
It's a real rank thing there too, isn't it? Because it's like Dave up top and then those two shitheads.
Yeah, then the rest.
The bottom. Is that what you feel, Dave?
No, I love you guys and I'm really sorry and I don't want to fight because I'd lose. Otherwise,
smart.
I would want to fight, just to put it on the record.
Okay, interesting choice.
That's smart, I guess.
And the Sass Twins win again.
Classic Sass. Classical Sass. All right. Which is sort of like the name of a song.
A great song.
And the similarities end there.
Mm-hmm.
We're all big fans of classical gas. We
yes.
all are.
Mason Williams.
I'm more a fan of the bit in The Simpsons where Lenny requests classical gas.
Play classical gas! Great track, it really, really is.
It's in The Dish, great Australian film.
Great film. Great
and the similarities
film.
End there.
It's late at night and we're going to lose our minds. So that'll be fun.
Look forward
it's
going to
be real fun.
Next hour and a half of that.
Anyway, let's get into the report for this week.
Now, it's Mr. Matt's turn to report.
I love it when you call me Mr. Matt.
You were joking downstairs before about everyone else going out for beers on this Thursday night and us having to come up here and do a school report. So you are going to be Mr. Matt this week. And to get us on topic, because Matt has written a report that Jess and I don't know what it's about, he's going to ask us a question.
All right, question time.
So my question to you is, it's very self-referential, so you guys are probably in quite a good position to be able to answer this, okay. But also...
Is the answer Dave?
Or Jess?
Oh, fuck, all right, well, if you're going to get it before I even... Today's episode is about Dave and Jess.
Yay!
Legit been requested on multiple occasions.
My favourite subjects.
The question today is, whose life story, so it's a person,
okay.
Whose life story includes connections to Do Go On favourite topics like World War I, the Academy Awards, Walt Disney, Queen Elizabeth II, and
fuck?
James Bond?
How?
Some of them are tenuous.
Are they alive at the same time as many of these things?
Yes.
Is it the same that everyone in that sentence was alive in the 20th century, just like everyone in this room?
Yes. No. Some grazers and some like deep involvements.
So they're probably English, maybe?
All right, let me narrow it down a little bit. Which author's life story includes connections to World War II, the Academy Awards, Walt Disney, Queen Elizabeth II, and James Bond? It's a tough one. I imagine you wouldn't get it. What if I threw in Cadbury chocolate?
Wonka? No.
You were with the author.
Roald Dahl.
It is Roald Dahl.
Ah!
I'm giving the point to Jess there.
Yeah, because I said Wonka.
And Wonka was kind of based a little bit on Roald Dahl himself,
actually,
apparently.
I was just calling Matt a wanker and I misspoke. But don't tell him.
Lucky I got away with this one.
So it's Roald Dahl.
Roald Dahl.
I love Roald Dahl.
Very cool. Are you going to go through and tick off all these references?
I think, yeah. I created that question as I was writing the report. I'm like, oh, another one. Roald Dahl. That's
a striking name.
Yeah, it is Rolled. A striking name.
Rolled.
Rolled.
Is that his birth name?
That is his birth name, yeah. This topic is...
Oh, do you know that, Jess?
I did know that.
Bullshit.
Oh, fuck you.
You're a real wonker.
Oh, fuck off. Oh, get fucked. No. Oh, come on, fuck you.
This
I've
topic
got
was...
access to the internet. I've looked up things before. Fuck off.
Topic was suggested by Harry Green via email. Also, someone who goes by the name Me. At Wajink Scrawler, Andy CT at SuperAndy83, Kevin Flanagan via email, and also OscarEd51 at OscarEd51.
Very popular request.
Quite a popular request. Roald Dahl was born in Llandaff, a district in Cardiff, Wales, on the 13th of September 1916. His parents were Norwegian-born, Sophie and Harold.
Oh.
And he was named after Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen.
Oh, the first one to get to the South Pole.
Yes.
That is true. He's the first ever man.
Oh, I know that too.
Is that another... I could call that another connection to maybe what...
Oh, and then when you say another connection, it's another rainbow connection. Muppets.
Muppets. Here we go. All right. We're going to rack up a bunch here today if we're going...
I'll find a
that
way.
That tenuous, you'll find a way. All right. I want you to link it to all 104 episodes.
You got it.
Including the one about Roald Dahl, which should be easier.
Maybe.
His sisters had similarly unique names.
Sisters. Okay. Who that we've reported on has sisters? Okay. Cleopatra.
Marie Curie.
There we go. Fuck yeah.
All right, this is going to get tedious. And they had pretty unique names for Welsh children as well. Astri, Alfhild, and Else.
Else.
E-L-C-E. S-E.
Is that Elsie?
What else?
Elsie? No, Else.
It's probably Else. Elsa? Elsa?
Yeah, yep.
As a child, Norwegian was Dahl's first language, which he would speak at home, and he spent many childhood summer vacations staying with his grandparents in the Norwegian capital of Oslo. When Dahl was 3 years old, his sister Astrid died from appendicitis at only 7 years of age.
Mm. Houdini.
In his autobiography...
was also once 7 years old.
Also had the problem with his appendix, remember? That's why, and he died.
Oh.
Do you remember that episode?
Yeah, I do. It was my report. Yeah, I do remember that episode, Dave. Fuck off.
Can I ask for a moratorium on tedious links? Maybe just note them down. And at the very end, give us all 104, please,
God,
Dave and Jess.
This is interesting, isn't it? That he wants us to stop interrupting and let him do his report instead of jumping in with references to things that nobody cares about, like, oh, I don't know, football clubs or bands.
It is draft period at the moment in the AFL, and the Saints...
Sorry to cut you off there, Matt, but if you could just go on with your report.
Just to remind you, what you interrupted there was me telling you about Roald Dahl's 7-year-old sister dying.
Yes.
Which reminds me of a famous magician.
In his autobiography, Dahl later wrote that Astrid was far and away my father's favourite. That's me being him. That's why I said my there. Soon after her death.
It's weird that you chose that one as your favourite Dahl. Fair enough, Matt. Yeah,
all right.
Soon after her death, struggling with grief, his father, Harold Dahl, passed away from pneumonia.
Mm.
Dahl wrote, "My father refused to fight, so he died."
Brutal review from a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
I mean, he wrote that later on.
I know, but like, it's like, come on, Dad.
Yeah.
Spoonful of concrete. Harden the fuck up.
He was just saying he was so heartbroken from his daughter.
I know, I get what he's saying, but it's a brutal thing for him to say.
I think when, as a 3-year-old, you lose your dad and your older sister, you probably end up being, I don't know, I don't want to make excuses for the man, but you probably learn to hide your emotions a bit or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm talking about. Like, I understand the world. What a fucking waste of space I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, no, we're not arguing with that.
We've got the concrete over here, Matt.
Sass queens are turning on each other.
No, sorry, Maddie.
After considering moving back to Norway to be closer to family, Dahl's mum decided to stay in Wales to make sure her children received a British education, which her husband believed to be the best quality in the world. Roald was sent around to many different schools. He initially studied at the Llandaff Cathedral School, but after causing mischief playing practical jokes, he copped a beating from the principal and was transferred to St. Peter's Boarding School, which he fucking hated. Fucking hated it. It was real tough. Then he was transferred to a high-achieving private school named Repton. Didn't have a good time there either. He did not enjoy the school system. It was just pretty brutal and pretty rough. Anyway, according to his autobiography, his friend Michael copped a huge caning by the headmaster, Jeffrey Fisher.
A Michael caning.
Hello. I'm
whipping the shit out of you.
I'm whipping your arse. Oh, okay.
Whipping your ox.
He knows
you're
what he
next.
Did.
So Jeffrey Fisher went on to become his headmaster there, went on to become the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Oh.
Which I guess you could relate back to King Henry VIII, because he sort of started the religion that he's the head of anyway.
Tenuous.
Anyway, Jeffrey Fisher, as Archbishop of Canterbury, crowned Queen Elizabeth II in 1953. So that is...
I didn't see the link.
2 degrees of separation.
And that was his headmaster?
That was his headmaster, yeah.
That's genuinely impressive.
He wasn't seen to be a particularly good writer at school. One of his English teachers wrote in his report that they had never met anyone who so persistently writes words meaning the exact opposite of what is intended.
Oh, that's great.
You might have known this. Dahl was a very tall man. He was 6'6". And
quite tall.
Was pretty sporty. He played squash, captain of the squash team, also played soccer and cricket.
Is there another name for squash?
Racquetball is similar but different.
It's not the same. Cool. Thank you for clarifying.
But a very similar idea. It's in a weird room where you hit the ball up against the wall.
I don't think I want to.
Yeah, it feels
like
a bit
claustrophobic.
That, yeah, you close.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Close in and one wall's glass or something?
Nah, I need space.
Yeah.
From you guys, I need some space. We need to talk.
That's why we record in this field. according to his autobiography, his mum offered to pay for him to study at Oxford or Cambridge after graduating Repton, but he replied, "No, thank you. I want to go straight from school to work for a company that will send me to wonderful faraway places like Africa or China." Which is what he did after graduating in 1932. He hiked through Newfoundland. Then in 1934, accepted a gig with Shell Oil, which had him working in Kenya and Tanzania in Africa until 1939.
Wow. Also, how was she going to afford to send him to Oxford or Cambridge?
Cash money. I never just told you. They did all right. They were able to immigrate overseas. And
true.
I think they were...
wealthy.
Yeah,
not super wealthy.
Yeah, but it had some money.
Comfortable.
She played the stocks, Jess. Come on.
She played the bogeys.
Yeah, she was a great, great professional
gambler. She played
gambler.
The fiddle really well. Got paid a lot. Really, really in-demand busker.
She was a fiddler.
So 1939, Dave, why do you reckon that was where the job ended?
It's a good year.
Probably had to go home to enlist.
It was so World War II broke.
Couldn't even think of a joke answer. You just went straight for the truth.
He's playing my role. One of us has to misunderstand what the point of the show is.
Yeah, Jess, come on.
And answer everything sincerely.
We look back at the joke per answer capita.
Yeah, that's true. You are the leader.
capita.
But if we look at the dumb answers per capita,
yeah,
you are killing it,
James. I am the champion.
So World War II broke. Dahl ended up in Nairobi.
It broke.
In Kenya. It did. It broke. Aww. Broke early and it broke often. And whatever that means. And so he ended up in Kenya for training before joining the Royal Air Force, the RAF.
They are the ones who fight in the sky.
With less, and he wasn't a pilot or anything, I don't think, at this point. I don't think he'd really flown stuff. That is true, Jess. Sorry for the delayed gratification.
Never.
What?
So we just had to cross-check your answer there, Jess, and you were correct.
Thank you.
So with less than 8 hours' experience in a Tiger Moth, he flew solo.
Shit.
That is so
bad. What the fuck?
And also, this is the start of the war, presumably, where there's still a lot of fight, like actual pilots alive.
Yeah,
because so by the end of the war, they're like, you, get in the plane and fly it.
Yeah.
But at the start, surely, isn't there, there's a few, right?
Well, we've talked about plane incidences where somebody perhaps didn't have enough experience and they had 150 hours. He has less than eight.
The Valentich disappearance and also Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah.
All right. Now I'm getting stuck into this stupid game that I also started and then got angry about. It's gone full circle. All right. Dahl was assigned to a squadron flying obsolete Gloster Gladiators, which were the last fighter biplanes used by the RAF. Fighter biplanes. He was a bit shocked to learn that he would not be trained in flying the Gladiators or in aerial combat. In September 1940, on the 19th, it was the day before Dahl was to commence active duty. He was sent off to fly his Gladiator from Egypt to Iraq and then on to Libya. When he came in to land in Libya, he was low on fuel and struggling to find an airstrip. He attempted to land in the desert, but crashed with the undercarriage of the aircraft hitting a boulder. He fractured his skull and was temporarily blinded. The plane was in flames, and despite his injuries, he was able to drag himself clear before passing out. He was rescued and taken by train to a Royal Navy hospital in Alexandria, Egypt. And
not Alexandria, Sydney.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And
he was dragged to Sydney.
An RAF inquiry into the crash found that he was given dud instructions and he was accidentally sent to a no man's land area with no airstrip, and it was somewhere between the Allied troops and where the Italian forces were located.
Whoops.
Can I also point out how dud the instructions are? He's in Egypt. They've told him to fly to Iraq and then to Libya, despite the fact that Libya is next door to Egypt.
Yeah, I think there were. I think there were other. I think there were.
You go north and then come back.
I think there must have been he was picking someone up or something.
Okay.
There was some sort of reason. Or drugs. I've said the wrong thing.
Matt, do you reckon it was drugs?
Drugs. He was drug running.
He was picking up drugs.
He was picking up drugs. He was putting them down.
Down some drugs.
But they did tell him.
He was picking up the drugs you were putting down. Just, I don't know.
I would never put down drugs.
That's right.
If
you're
I
always,
pick
you're
them
always
up.
Talking them up.
Yeah. Never put down drugs.
Never put down drugs or your friends. Just let's all be supportive. Yeah. I'm going to reference an article from September last year, a bunch. It's from this publication called The Monthly. I don't know if you guys know that. It's an Australian publication. It comes
How
out...
frequently does it come out?
Look, I don't know this for sure, but I assume it is weekly. The article that I reference is called The Man Who Never Grew Up. Here is an excerpt. In a telegram sent to his mother from the Anglo-Swiss Hospital in Alexandria, dated 14th of October 1940, Dahl wrote, "Caught fire, but only concussion, broken nose. Absolutely okay soon." In reality, the crash had almost killed him. He was badly burned, blinded for weeks, and had to have his nose surgically reconstructed. The effects of a fractured skull and spinal injuries would cause Dahl chronic pain for the rest of his life. But he also believed that his near-death experience was the thing that made him a writer. In a 1954 letter to his close friend Charles Marsh, an American newspaper owner, Dahl confessed, "I doubt I would have written a line or would have had the ability to write a line unless some minor tragedy had sort of twisted my mind out of the normal rut." I left a weird pause there. "I emerged a tiny philosopher."
Oh, sorry, tiny philosopher is just cute. Like, I'm imagining, like, a little toddler wearing a three-piece suit. Just walking around a field, like...
I am Socrates!
What is time? That's very cute. You don't think a Tony Falls was cute? Oh, shit, that's cute.
Yeah, that's what happened to him after the plane crash.
He's so little, but he's still so thoughtful. He just... What he loves to think. Fuck, that's cute.
The toddler with a goatee.
I'm imagining, like, the KFC colonel, but little.
It's just the colonel, one of the world's most famous philosophers.
I was wondering where you were going with three-piece suit. Oh, yeah, my God. She's got a picture in her mind.
Is it a little southern gentleman?
Do you mean a three-piece suit or a three-piece feed?
I hated that joke.
I liked it, Dave. But that was good sass, Jess.
Thank you. So, do go on. Oh, tiny philosopher!
Dahl was later discharged from hospital and called fit to resume his flying duties.
It's just a different time, isn't it? Where you can break your back, fracture your head, and then a bit later they're like, get back out there, mate.
See ya.
Nose had to be just reformed onto his face.
Now,
he was blind for a few weeks. You'll be right, out you go. Go fly a plane.
Throughout 1941, he took part in aerial combat in the Mediterranean, taking part in the Battle of Athens alongside the highest scoring British ace of World War II.
Highest scoring at Miss Pac-Man.
Yeah, I thought that was a weird term as well. I looked it up and this guy was his name was Pat Paddle, and he was
Pat Paddle.
Pat Paddle.
Pat Paddle.
That's what he's known as. Yeah, Pat Paddle.
Paddle.
Real name might even be better than that, maybe not, but his real birth name was Marmaduke Paddle.
Fuck off!
And he chose Pat. I mean...
Marmaduke Paddle.
The Duke Paddle.
Fuck, that's good.
Such a good name.
Duke Paddle.
Put it in the list. That's top 10 we've ever had.
Wow. I'd love to see that list written out. Yeah, anyway, not now. Put the pen down, Dave.
Sorry.
I meant later.
That's the second Duke we've had.
So anyway, the highest scoring British ace of World War II, Pat Paddle.
So that just means the most kills, is that what that
means?
Yeah,
most kills. And to be an ace, I think you've got to have shot down at least 5+, I think. That's what it was, 5+
No,
planes. You've got
to do the queen and the king.
You got to do them? What a complicated system.
Ace is a cool nickname.
Yeah.
Fuck, now I'm stuck with Bop.
2 years later, you've gone, is it too late?
You went too early.
Mm.
Bop Ace. Ace Bop.
Mm-mm.
You can combine them.
Thank you.
You'd be making a huge mistake, but you could. I just want you to know that the option is open.
Thank you.
Anyway, Pat Paddle. So he was believed to have shot down as many as 50 enemy aircrafts during the war.
Meet you in a plane shooting them.
Oh, thank goodness. I thought you were having a stroke.
Dahl later described the battle as an endless blur of enemy fighters whizzing towards me from every side. 22 German aircraft are believed to have been taken out in this battle, as were 5 of Dahl's squadron, killing 4 Allied pilots, including our man Marmaduke.
Pat Paddle was taken out.
Yes, and that's the in 1941. Duke. So he took down 50 planes in only less than a couple of years. Which I have no idea, but it sounds like that is
impressive. But let's say like 25 planes a year.
So he was only in there for the...
It's like one a fortnight.
One a fortnight.
Yeah, whoop-de-frickin-do.
But if I'm reading this right, he's the highest scoring British ace of the war, and he died with the war having 4 years to remain. Is that right?
No one caught him up. Yeah, wow.
If I'm reading that right, but I may not
be. Where is their work ethic? Shoot down more planes.
It's really disappointing.
Yeah, it is. Back. But do you know what it is? I mean, that sort of attitude comes from higher up. And I think management need to maybe put in place some sort of goal system. Yep. You've really got to have ownership over your work.
Yes. Yep.
Otherwise, you're not motivated.
Blame Churchill.
Yeah, it's Churchill's fault.
Dahl continued to see combat, but as the year went on, he started to get bad headaches and began blacking out from them. Regularly black out.
Not real good when you're a pilot.
No.
This led to him being sent home to Britain.
Oh, so not going blind and breaking his back. They're like, out you go. He's got headaches. Back home you go, mate. Now you're done.
Yeah.
I told you, Jess, it was a different time.
It was a different time.
It was backwards. The less pain you had, the more likely you are to go home. How you feeling? Good? Get the fuck home. Get out of here. Get away from the plane. This guy over here has got 7 broken limbs and he's only got 4. So, he's flying.
I mean, but he was blacking out.
He could break other limbs.
He was blacking out.
Yeah.
These 4. And then his willy. Broke that. That's 5.
Yeah, his third leg.
And then neck.
Yeah, we could call it a limb, but you could also point to a wall and call it a limb.
And that wall.
Was a limb.
7.
He's got a lot of limbs.
Dahl's injuries from the war led to him needing a hip replacement and surgery to his spine on multiple occasions.
Oh, that's not fun.
He was then transferred to Washington, D.C. in the United States. Probably didn't need to qualify that. Becoming an intelligence officer at the British Embassy. While in Washington, he was encouraged to start writing...
Sorry, Washington where?
DC, which I think stands for District of Columbia. I broke that word up weird. District of Columbia. Is that right?
That's right.
Great. I knew Dave would knew. I knew Dave would knew.
Did you know Dave would know?
I'm either doing a lot of editing or this episode is going to be fucked.
I think it's going to be fucked.
It's going to be fucked. Let's be honest with each other.
I hope we always are.
While in Washington, he was encouraged to start writing by author C.S. Forrester. He later said that his writing career was a pure fluke, saying, without being asked to, I doubt if I'd ever have even thought to do it.
Wow.
Which I love. And I kind of think that about a lot of things. I think without a few different things happening, you know, I reckon a lot of creative people wouldn't necessarily... Like, some people have it in them. They just know from when they're born.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's people out there... Like, the best novel ever written just never got made because the guy was too busy working down mines or something. You know, to me, that would make sense that people wouldn't...
I wouldn't have thought I would do a podcast.
If you didn't get asked.
Yeah.
Matt, would you have done this podcast if I hadn't asked you?
This podcast?
Well, hey, do you reckon you would be podcasting now? There you go.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I had no ambition to at the time, I don't think. I can't remember. So long ago. Remember, we were so young.
You're my everything now.
My first, my last.
Never leave me.
My everything.
My hairy thing?
My hairy.
You're my first, my last, my hairy thing.
That's what I call you guys.
Started out poetic.
Okay, got who's a bit first, weird. Who's last, who's hairy thing? Should I go first?
Matt's definitely the hairy thing. Look at his face.
He's so hairy.
And I'm the last.
Oh, nah, that's about right.
Sloppy thirds. Every time.
After myself.
My hairy thing.
That really changes the meaning of that song.
You're my hairy thing. Never shave, baby.
Soon after being spoken to by C.S. Forrester, being encouraged, he had his first short story published in the Saturday Evening Post on the 1st of August 1942. It was titled A Piece of Cake, and it was a story focused on his time in the war.
And how easy he thought it was. Whatever. Yeah. Yawn.
Original title was Piece of Piss, but the editor said, come on, man.
Piss, cake sells more than piss.
Yeah. Cake sells. Yeah, everyone knows that.
We've done a survey. Would you rather cake or piss? Most people said cake. A few people said piss, and we gave them what they wanted.
We pissed on their cake.
Compromise. That's all we're saying. Just compromise. Dahl started out writing stories for adults, but he had his first attempt at a children's fiction story in 1942, writing the Gremlins, who was Walt Disney funded.
The
cartoonist and a guy from
Disney. No, I know who Walt Disney is. But was the Gremlins, it's his first thing for kids, but is it like a film more than a novel?
No, it was a novel.
And oh, but Disney paid for that.
Disney, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Sort of kind of like optioning it, but it never got made into a film because it wasn't particularly successful. I was reading about the movie, you guys are probably familiar with, Gremlins. So the idea of gremlins became popular in World War II with pilots and stuff, and that's what inspired him.
Oh.
Things going wrong with engines and stuff, it's like, oh, it's gremlins, you know.
Oh, okay.
That's where the faults are. So they sort of made up these little monsters.
Aww.
The guy who ended up making the Gremlins film said he was, you know, he had read that story and he was somewhat inspired by it. And then at other times he said that he wasn't at all. You know, it was its own different thing. I don't know, I haven't seen it, but there were no planes, right? Maybe there were. What the fuck?
I also haven't seen it, Jess.
The can't put them in a microwave.
I wonder if the Simpsons episode, you know, the Halloween episode of the Simpsons with the gremlin on the bus. I wonder if that maybe so was scary. Based on. I'm
that's
not
actually
sure.
Terrifying, that episode.
I didn't like that.
So, yeah, so it wasn't particularly successful, and he went back to writing macabre stories aimed at adults throughout the 40s and into the 50s. In 1953, Dahl released a collection of his short stories entitled Someone Like You.
It was Never Mind I Fart, which is the inspiration for the Adele song.
I googled it to look into the book, and that was by far the most common result on Google was the Adele-y song. Fascinating story. I thought I'd throw in a little fascinating story there.
Was that fascinating, was it?
Yeah.
That you googled something.
Yeah.
And something else came up.
Ah, I'm losing confidence in that story.
Google "you're my hairy thing" and see what comes up.
My first, my last, my hairy thing, my hairy tick.
Your hairy dick.
Yes. Enough about it. All right, let's move on. So, Someone Like You was very well received by critics and went on to win an Edgar Award. Have you heard of the Edgar Awards?
After Edgar Wright, the director of Shaun of the Dead.
It's actually close.
Edgar Allan Poe.
It's weird they didn't call them the Poe Awards.
Then you could win a Poe poll.
While he is famous for his children's novels, he also had a lot of success writing for adults, winning two further Edgar Awards, which are presented by the Mystery Writers of America. One of his most famous short stories for adults, The Smoker, which is also known as The Man from the South, went on to be adapted for the screen a few different times, including by Quentin Tarantino, and also for Alfred Hitchcock's television series Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
What was the Tarantino one?
A segment in his 1995 film, Four Rooms.
Oh.
Hmm.
You regret asking now.
No further questions, Your Honour.
This is again from that monthly article about talking about his adult stories. Dahl's adult stories are still a disturbing read. They share in the weird imagination that makes his children's fiction so satisfying, but are shorn of the boisterous and counterbalancing humour. And unlike in his children's fiction, cruelty tends to triumph, weak characters are humiliated, and cunning ones glory in their conquest.
Hmm.
In 1953, that same year as the Adele song he wrote came out, Dahl married actress Patricia Neal. Familiar with her, Dave? Jess?
No.
I didn't know her name, but she was an accomplished thespian. And Neal...
thespian.
Accomplished thespian. I pronounce my P's as B's. Neal, who would go on to win the Academy Award for Best Actress in 1963.
Wow.
Wow, what role?
What a power couple.
It was the movie HUD, which I've never heard of. H-U-D?
HUD.
HUD.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that either.
Which is what Kate Hudson was named after. Her. And then, from that, the Hudson River, named after her.
Yeah, well, after Kate's son. That doesn't make sense at all.
That would be Hudson-son.
And her son's name was, of course, River.
River, yes.
It was just very convenient that the river happened to be a river.
Mm. Yeah, that is convenient.
That's lucky.
Convenient.
Yeah. If it wasn't,
oof, that'd be weird. God.
They were just pointing at things and saying, that's Hudson River. Oh, it's a river.
Go, we're good.
Anyway, they were married for 30 years, from 1953 to 1983. And Dahl and Neal had five children, Olivia, Chantel, Theo, Ophelia and Lucy. In 1960, he had a pretty tough time in the 60s. In 1960, when Theo was just 4 months old, his pram was struck by a taxi and sort of pushed into a bus in New York City. And for a while after he survived...
Oh, my God.
For a while after he suffered from hydrocephalus. Which is an accumulation of cerebrospinal fluid within the brain.
Oh.
Due to this, Roald Dahl became directly involved in the development of a device which was able to alleviate the problem.
Wow.
The device was the Wade-Dahl-Till valve, Wade being a hydraulic engineer named Stanley Wade, and Till being neurosurgeon Kenneth Till, obviously the Dahl part being Roald Dahl, the children's author.
Wow. Oh. Holy shit.
Some people are sort of saying like he quite interested in gizmos and stuff, and that came through in some of his writing.
Who's a what's-its and gizmos and doo-wackies.
Yeah, little doo-wackies. Sorry, just to correct you there on the terminology. But the device was used successfully on nearly 3,000 children around the world.
Oh, that's incredible.
So he invented a thing that, like a life-saving thing.
Wow.
We played a role in it. I imagine the neurosurgeon and the engineer probably...
Well,
he's going, let's think of a cool name. I got words. And probably money too. No, I don't know. I didn't look into that too much. But anyway, he was involved enough to get his name in it.
Mm.
In November 1962, Dahl's eldest child, Olivia, died from the measles at 7 years of age. Which, like his sister, same age. Her death led to Dahl losing faith in God, viewing religion as a sham. He went to... former Archbishop of Canterbury, Geoffrey Fisher, his old headmaster, for spiritual guidance. And he was dismayed when he was told that while Olivia would be in heaven, her dog would never join her there. Thinking back to that conversation, Dahl later recalled, "I wanted to ask him how he could be so absolutely sure that other creatures did not get the same special treatment as us. I sat there wondering if this great and famous churchman really knew what he was talking about, and whether he knew anything about God or heaven. And if he didn't, then who in the world did?" You know, he just started doubting it. I was like, I don't know if this joker knows what he's talking about.
Mm.
And if not him, he's basically the king of the Church of England, if I understand that right. The king's that, isn't he? But you know what I mean.
The king of the church.
So the 1960s were very tough for the Dahl family. Following his son's injuries and his daughter's passing, his wife, Patricia, suffered multiple cerebral aneurysms while pregnant with their fifth child, Lucy. She was in a coma for 3 weeks, and one newspaper even ran an obituary for her.
Whoa!
But she pulled through. So at that stage, she was an Academy Award winner.
This is after the Academy Award?
Yeah.
Wow.
Whoa.
So, you know, it was big news at the time, and a paper's running an obituary saying she's gone, coma for 3 weeks, but she pulled through and gave birth to a healthy child.
Wow.
The aneurysms led to a lengthy rehabilitation process where she had to relearn how to walk and talk. But she also had to, you know, she went back to acting after that as well, to such a high standard that she was once again nominated for an Academy Award in 1968, only a couple of years later. That was for her role in The Subject Was Roses, another film I'm not familiar with, but yeah, obviously very good actress.
That's
actor.
Crazy.
She lost on this occasion.
What the fuck?
To tied winners, which I didn't... Does that happen very often?
Pretty rarely.
And this doesn't seem right. Barbara Streisand. And she won a Best Actress Award.
Yeah.
Wow. And Katharine Hepburn. So that's quite big double.
There you go, Katharine Hepburn, who won 4.
Streisand.
Best Actress Academy Awards.
Yeah, and the other Hepburn won an EGOT, right? Is that right? No.
Audrey Hepburn, but they're not related.
Not related. And so did Whoopi Goldberg.
They're not related.
The two Hepburns, no.
Really?
Katharine and Audrey Hepburn.
I thought they were.
No, there you go.
They're not related.
No.
I reckon we'd be able to find you realizing that in the Academy Awards episode as well.
No. Did we talk about that?
Cher also won an Academy Award.
Yeah.
Cher.
Yeah, she's amazing. But the Hepburns? Really?
Yeah, they did feel like they'd be sisters, right? What are the odds?
They look similar.
They're the only two Hepburns I've ever heard of.
Me too.
Apart from Hepburn Springs, the outer suburb of Melbourne.
Yes, which is named after them.
Yes. What about
Johnny Hepburn?
Oh, sorry. Also Johnny Hepburn.
And who I assume exists somewhere.
What about Gary Christopher Hepburn? Walken Hepburn?
Oh, obviously Christopher Walken Hepburn.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether it's your first ever website or your business is expanding, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website and engage with your audience.
Jess, before you jump in, Dave, can you say entrepreneurs again? It sounds so good.
Entrepreneurs.
Oh my God.
God, he's good.
Jeez.
If it feels a bit overwhelming to start your own website, don't worry. You can get help with written content on your website with Squarespace AI. Generating instant, personalized results that know and show your brand identity. You explain what your site's about, you choose your tone, you enter what you need, and you get short and long form text. How cool is that?
Oh my God, can Squarespace just do my life?
It'd be good if it could do my taxes.
Hey, you can easily manage your clients and invoices. Two things that I definitely have, from vetting leads to receiving payment via invoices in one streamlined and customizable workflow.
Sorry, Matt, can you pronounce streamlined for me again?
Streamlined.
Beautiful.
Was that closer?
Yeah, in that it was the word.
Okay.
And not streamlined. You can also sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell membership or courses, or you can sell files that your customers can download, like PDFs, music, ebooks.
Right, Jess, can I just get you to say the word courses again?
Courses.
Nailed it. Head to squarespace.com/dogoon for a free trial and to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/dogoon.
Oh my God.
Despite the tough times through the 1960s, Dahl had another much more successful go at writing fiction aimed at children during this time. He wrote classics such as 1961's James and the Giant Peach.
I know it.
Ooh, a film that terrified me as a child.
I loved it.
Really?
Mm.
I didn't like how he was treated badly by the step.
Yeah.
He gets adopted out, or grandparents, or auntie and uncle.
Very common motifs through his stories.
Yeah, being treated and then having to go off into your own little, like, imaginary world.
Right. Yeah.
And that, some were saying that, you know, his dad died when he was young. A lot of orphans, the heroes of the stories are often orphans.
Mm.
And then he was off to boarding school, and there were a lot of really tough adults around, you know, beating him down. And so that was potentially one of the reasons why a lot of his stories went that way. He also wrote 1964's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which was obviously it was very popular. And 1970's Fantastic Mr. Fox.
I loved Fantastic Mr. Fox.
All of these have been adapted for stage and or screen, as well as later classics such as The BFG and Matilda. And many of those becoming really big hits, like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and the BFG, were adapted for screen multiple times.
Mm-hmm. The big question is, Gene Wilder or Johnny Depp?
There is no question.
It depends on what you're talking about.
Who did it worse? Johnny Depp.
If the question is, who smuggled small dogs into Australia, then I think it is.
That was a question, yes.
In the 1960s, Dahl also wrote some screenplays, including adaptations for two Ian Fleming novels.
We talked about this, didn't we? He did one of the Bond movies and then also Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So that's the Bond link.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
You Only Live Twice was the Bond film, and also Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
He
also began writing the screen adaptation for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but after failing to meet deadlines, the job was taken away from him. It was taken over by David Seltzer, who changed the storyline in a few minor ways, but Dahl was unhappy with these changes, and he ended up disowning the film, and was particularly disappointed with how he thought it placed too much emphasis on Willy Wonka and not enough on Charlie. Which is pretty well illustrated by the fact that the movie version changed the name from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. That film came out in 1971. His disappointment led him to refuse any further remakes of the book or its sequel, Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator, in his lifetime. So a remake, obviously, with Johnny Depp was made not until after he passed away.
Spoiler alert.
Do you guys picture a certain kind of illustration with Roald Dahl books?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I totally do as well. That's sort of, it's pretty loose and scratchy.
Yeah. I'm imagining the witches.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of the twits.
The twits, yes. Did you realise, though, that illustrator, he only got on board with the 1978 book The Enormous Crocodile?
Oh, I remember that one.
And the illustrator's name was Quentin Blake. Yeah. So for the first, you know, 15, you know, years or so of him writing children's books, people didn't have those pictures in their heads when they were reading along. Hmm. Not until 1978, and from then on, sort of. This is again quoting from the Monthly. There's a paragraph here about Blake. In Blake, Dahl found an artist who perfectly captured both the humour and the grotesquerie of his writing, which is a fucking sick word, grotesquerie.
So good.
Blake's line drawings are one reason why Dahl's books have not dated. Unlike the visual style of Enid Blyton's famous Five series, the present-day appeal of which is self-consciously retro. Blake's illustrations are essentially timeless, and in their zest, they fairly bounce off the page, with a kinetic energy that complements Dahl's own enthusiastic choice of words, and the physical transformations to which his characters are so often subject. Okay, so I've touched on a little bit of dodgy stuff about him.
I was going to say, he seems pretty good.
Yeah, apart from just being a little bit backwards, but...
Yeah, and anyway, this is sort of the most controversial thing about him is probably this. I didn't know a lot about him before reading up on him this week.
He killed several people.
You know...
A day.
It was a habit, but it helped him write.
I'd be interested to know if you guys knew about this. I definitely didn't. He was a bit of an anti-Semite.
Oh. No, I did not know that.
Did you know that, Dave?
Did not know that at all.
Yeah, it feels wild that he's still movies are being made out of his books. He's still seen as like a legend, but pretty full on. This is what he said once to a reporter. There's a trait in the Jewish character that does provoke animosity. I mean, there is always a reason why anti-anything crops up anywhere. Even a stinker like Hitler doesn't just pick on them for no reason.
Ooh. No.
I see.
But at least he said Hitler was bad.
That's true. That
he said he was a stinker. He doesn't agree with Hitler.
But he doesn't pick on him for no reason.
Yeah, Hitler had a point.
What a wild thing to say. He said that to a journalist.
No.
Yes.
Not good.
So now I'm going to give you some people trying to make excuses for him a bit, okay? He said there were other examples of similar things that he'd said. Steven Spielberg directed the film adaptation of his book, Dahl's book, The Big Friendly Giant, in 2016. He's Spielberg's a Jewish filmmaker. I don't know if you've heard of him. Steven Spielberg, you guys?
No.
No, but I'm willing to hear him out.
When he was asked at Cannes Film Festival about these things, he said, I wasn't aware of any of Roald Dahl's personal stories. I was focused on the story he wrote. Later, when I began asking questions of people who knew Dahl, they told me he liked to say things he didn't mean just to get a reaction. And all his comments, which I've now read about bankers, are all very old-fashioned, mid-30s stereotypes we hear from Germany that he would say for effect, even if they were horrible things. So he's sort of... It's like he's going, no, I was just trying to get a rise out of
he's
people.
He's just being a shit stirrer.
Which feels, to me, kind of unlikely.
Yeah.
Like, you don't say that.
I mean, he's not a punk. He's a children's writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, fuck the man.
Fuck the man.
Here's a magical chocolate factory.
Woo!
His Wikipedia page, they go into it a bit as well, quoting Amelia Foster, who's the director of the Roald Dahl Museum, talking about these quotes. Amelia's quote as saying, "This is again an example of how Dahl refused to take anything seriously, even himself. He was very angry at the Israelis. He had a childish reaction to what was going on in Israel. Dahl wanted to provoke, as he always provoked at dinner. His publisher was a Jew, his agent was a Jew, and he thought nothing but good things of them. He asked me to be his managing director, and I'm Jewish." So he's sort of saying, look, no, some of his best friends are Jewish kind of thing.
Mm.
And there was a quote from Dahl also saying that he wasn't anti-Semitic, he was anti-Israeli. So he was, but, I don't know. Yeah, fuck.
And the director of the museum there does seem like they're sort of defending their life as well.
Yeah.
A bit like the Simpsons where she exposes Jebediah Springfield as a fraud.
Totally.
The director of the Springfield Museum is like, no, no, got to cover that up because I've directed my dedicated my life to this.
This guy being a hero, yeah. Yeah, totally. It is exactly that. I wouldn't be surprised if that was The Simpsons spoofing this. Because he died in 1990, same year The Simpsons started. I don't know if that's a coincidence. It started in 89, didn't it?
Yep. Damn. Sorry. But the same year that Jess and I started our lives.
Yeah, he died when you were born. Do you think maybe his spirit lives on in you guys?
Definitely, yes.
I've got some opinions.
And I love chocolate.
and factories.
So obviously that's all pretty fucked. And the other thing that came up a bit reading about him, you know, from people talking negatively about him, was his sort of more old school fashion opinions about women. That's not the right... I'm being like... I'm coding it. He's misogynistic.
Okay, yep.
So the monthly article also talked about some of those themes running into a lot of his writing, especially his adult fiction, but also some of his children's fiction. And they said that the women characters in Dahl's children's stories are split between being benign and evil. One of the two. Yeah. You know, then he's not particularly positive with his women. Anyway, so... And it's really hard to do this sort of report where you're talking about a guy and then you're going to wrap up the story. But it's like, anyway, you know, he went on to have successes.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know how to do this particularly. But
at the same time, you've got to be balanced. Give us the good and the bad, you know?
So his last decade of his life, died in 1990, last decade of his life was super successful writing. This is also when he's saying a lot of these fucked up things.
Great.
But he had a lot of his big hits.
I'm saying these things and I'm getting bigger. It's working.
This is the monthly again. Dahl wrote several of his best books, the BFG, The Witches, Matilda, and his two volumes of his autobiography, Boy and Going Solo, during the 1980s, the final decade of his life. He had been re-energized by a second marriage, so he divorced after 30 years and remarried. Basically straight away to a woman named Felicity Licky Crossland. It'd be Lissy.
No, Licky.
No,
is
Licky.
Licky.
Call her Flicky Licky.
With whom he had conducted a long-term love affair. Wow. He's also a cheater.
How many Academy Awards has Flicky Licky won?
Yeah, who's...
Who the fuck is Flicky Licky?
Who's cheating
on an Academy Award winner?
Get your bloody house in order, Rolled.
Rolled.
His four remaining children had all grown up, and he was an aging man writing for a vast and eager fan base of young readers. In his maturity, he had learned a certain tenderness. Not for everyone.
He got soft with age.
Probably
for everyone except a certain type.
Yeah, women.
I said two certain types, which is a large population of this planet.
Yeah, I'd say quite a large population. Probably no one who has read The Witches has ever forgotten the book's ending. Have you read The Witches?
I have not, because I do not know the book's ending.
I have read The Witches, but I don't remember how it ends.
Oh, well, that's interesting. So this monthly article...
I think
article...
as soon as you say it, I'll know.
All right, let's put a spoiler alert in case you want to read The Witches.
Yeah, spoiler alert if anyone's about to read The Witches.
Skip forward a minute.
I've seen the movie as a kid, which I remember finding quite scary. That was one of the things, you know.
Oh, didn't they turn the boy into a mouse?
Yeah. And the witches pretend to be women. You know, they're very pretty, but underneath they're hideous freaks, which is, and some people are saying is like, that's clear. That's him being a bit like women underneath, you know, don't trust them. They're all hiding something.
Well, that's just true. So he turns, the little boy gets turned into a mouse, and he spends basically the whole time trying to get turned back into a boy,
yes.
But he doesn't.
That's right.
Yeah. Which okay, is pretty, I do pretty, remember.
So that I'm going to read the last few lines out of it, which this monthly article also quoted. Well, you sum that up nicely. He doesn't get turned back into a boy.
Mm.
And this is a little dialogue between him and his grandmother.
Grandmother, yeah.
How old are you, Grandmama? I asked. I'm 86, she said. Will you live another 8 or 9 years? I might, she said, with a bit of luck. You've got to, I said, because by then I'll be a very old mouse, and you'll be a very old grandmother, and soon after that we'll both die together.
Yeah, brutal.
So he's a boy going, I know how long mice live.
Yeah, I've worked out the average age of a mouse.
Which seems long. I didn't realise mice live that long. But anyway.
Well, maybe when they're living with an elderly woman who looks after them, yeah. And out in the wild where cats can get them.
Just as a boy, imagine like his, and sort of saying like that's rolled sort of, all right, that's how it is.
Mm.
Move on. My dad died. He just died.
He just kept yelling that all the time. My dad died. Every time the publisher said, maybe we should change that. My dad died.
No, you're right. Yeah, sorry.
I'm so sorry. He died 70 years ago. So sorry.
Dahl died on November the 23rd, 1990, from an unspecified infection at the age of 74. Over his decade-long writing career, Dahl composed 19 children's books and 9 short story collections. Dahl's popularity in Australia, at least, is still very strong. Over the last decade, each of Dahl's leading children's titles, Matilda, The Witches, The BFG, and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, have all made roughly $1 million in local sales.
Just in Australia?
Yeah.
Wow.
Books.
How about them?
So he would have been mega rich.
Yeah. I mean, that. But all of those sales then are after he died. So, but he was selling even better during his life, I guess. But yeah, he's just one of, he's just an evergreen sort of popularity wise. I don't think a lot of people know about the hate in his soul, but
sorry, that's funny.
I'll finish with this line again from the monthly article that I obviously love so much, which I should link to if anyone wants to read it in full. This is quoting Dahl. I believe that mentally I am a sort of overgrown child.
I'm an overgrown child.
He wrote in 1986 for the Sunday Times. He described himself as a giggler, a lover of childish jokes and knock-knocks.
My ears are burning.
A chocolate and sweet eater.
Ooh!
And a raging anti-Semite.
Oh!
Cheers.
Is that the next part?
And a person with one half of him that has completely failed to grow up and understand that Jewish people are just people too.
One half of him has failed to grow up. Which half?
Yeah, it's,
he looks down at his legs. At just
children's
like
legs.
7-year-old's legs.
He's that tiny philosopher.
God damn it.
And that is my report. What a conflicted story.
Yeah.
I didn't know, reminiscing
about these childhood stories and going, yeah. He was the big friendly giant, 6'6".
Mm.
You know, he went through so many tough things, and you're like,
and he has that sort of famous quote about like thinking good thoughts,
right? Yeah,
you know, like thinking good thoughts and then your face will be beautiful. I mean, he probably said it a bit better, but he was a writer. What am I, a bloody podcaster? Hey, how about it?
Well, Roald Dahl never even appeared on a podcast, so fuck him.
Yeah, fuck that guy. I'm gonna find
my parents went to see Roald Dahl speak it was probably the '80s. When he came out to Australia.
Really? That's cool.
And it said on the thing, this is for adults only. This is not a kids event. This is not a kids event. Then when they went along, some people had brought their kids. And apparently he came out and fucking cracked the shits that there were kids there and made him leave.
Oh, brutal.
Because he's like, this is not like, I'm not talking about my kids' books. This is,
you, get the fuck out.
Adult writer,
that
yeah.
That is tough. That is tough for
everyone. I know. It's like, the parents haven't read the... But
that same person wrote, if you have good thoughts, they'll shine out of your face like sunbeams and you'll always look lovely.
Now get the fuck out!
So, you know, we've all got... we've all got flaws, I guess.
Yes.
Mm.
Pelvic flaws.
We've all got pelvic flaws.
It is true.
Some of us wear waterproof sacks because our pelvic floors are not as good as others. Oh, thank you for that.
What just happened?
Dave just moved on, which as he should have.
All right, yep, go for it, Dave. Sorry.
And thank you for that great report there, Matt. Very good.
A very good report, Matt.
Very good stuff.
Thanks, Jess.
A crazy life.
My sassy twin.
Sass twins.
We'd like to thank Roald Dahl for ever living so we could talk about him. And we'd also like to thank everyone that supports the show in any way, just for downloading it, you're supporting the show.
Also, Harry, me, Andy, Kevin, and Oscar for suggesting the topic.
Yes, thank you,
Did
guys.
Did you guys know that he was a bit of a... Is that why you asked us to do the topic?
Are they also anti-Semites?
No, I just thought maybe they were like...
Anti-Semites.
Because, you know, it definitely added another dimension. Oh, man, I still haven't gotten over it. I only learnt that yesterday.
You mean last week when you started this report?
No, it was at the end. I'd pretty much written the report, and I'm like, oh, fuck. Imagine if I did it and just
glossed ignored over it. Yeah.
Ugh.
Here's a question. Now you know what you know, are you less inclined to want to engage with his material?
Yeah.
In your life? Yes. You introduce it to future generations of your family? Or are you a bit like, no, I don't want to read that now?
No,
Does it affect it?
I think it does affect me. I can't separate that well. Like others can, between art and the artist. I find it hard to do.
That's why you can't watch me do stand-up.
Because I know you're such a bad, dark-souled person.
But the comedy's so good. Oh, it's so good. Political. Biting.
She's poignant.
She's poignant.
Put down the mirror. I can't stand to look at myself and the rest of society.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's how I feel.
Jess, I didn't realize what pathos meant until you adorned the stage.
Adorned
with pathos.
With pathos, it was everywhere.
Flop out.
Just hanging it from the ceiling.
Ornamental pathos.
I thought it was I didn't realize it was actually just a decoration.
There's a curtain on the stage. Anyway, let's thank some Patreon peeps.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do here is thank everyone that supports the show through Patreon. Patreon.com/dogoonpod for all your Patreon-y needs, including where you can get bonus episodes of the show if you support us there, and a little shout-out at the end of the episode. And Jess, we've got some people you'd like to thank that support us through Patreon.
I do have some people I'd like to thank, and I do need to apologise early because I'm going to say your name wrong, and I'm sorry, and God bless you.
What's the game this week, Dave?
I was going to say the game could be giving them a Roald Dahl, like, children's book title.
Oh, okay.
You know? Like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
What if it's just them and the giant something?
Okay.
It's them and the giant something. Great.
So the first person I want to thank from Swansea in the UK is Sherry John Jones. Sherry John. C-E-R-I. What's that, Dave?
C-E-R-I.
Sherry John
What's
Jones.
What's Sherry?
Cherry John Jones.
It's a great name either way.
It's a good name.
John in a Jones works well.
Yeah, so good, right? So thank you very much.
Sherry John Jones and the giant duvet.
The giant duvet.
Where were you going with that?
If you can own one giant thing, you do not want a giant duvet.
Why not? It'd be so snuggly.
Oh, I'm imagining like giant. Like it's big enough to wrap up my house.
Yeah, then your house is snuggly.
You got a whole world under there.
Oh, that's so snuggly.
And it's all snuggly. You live in a snuggly world.
And you can get under there to get away from your abusive adoptive parents.
Yeah, imagine the adventures you could get up to.
Dave,
It's
like life is one big pillow fort. That's exciting.
That's really exciting.
Excellent. And the other person I would definitely like to thank as well from Prenton is Toby Channon.
That's another cool name. Channon.
Channon.
Toby
Channon. Toby Channon.
Toby Channon.
Thank you, Toby.
And the giant?
Uncle Toby's. Bar.
Toby Channon and the giant Uncle Toby's bar.
I'd read that. We're discovering...
I'd read that.
We're discovering that Roald Dahl may have been a genius after all. It's harder to come up with than we thought.
Disagree. This is very easy.
All right, Matt.
Next.
What do we got?
I'd love to thank, if I may, John Faulner.
Faulner.
That can't be right. John Faulner. And he's from Marrickville, New South Wales.
Oh, please come to our show, John.
Marrickville, yeah, that's in Sydney, right?
Yeah.
John.
That's like, there's a famous thing in Marrickville. What's the famous Marrickville thing? And what's his name? What?
Well, it's just a
what?
Beautiful, trendy area.
Yeah, but what's his story?
Oh, sorry.
You dildo.
What's his name again? John.
John Fallner.
John Fallner on the giant athletics track.
Yes.
9 kilometers in circumference.
Oh, it's huge.
No man or woman has ever completed it without stopping for a piss break.
You could definitely run 9Ks, Dave.
No man or woman can.
Wow. And so what kind of adventures does he get up to?
Mainly training for the big run.
You've given him a burden. I'd also love to thank, from Nelson in New Zealand, Leroy Emmanuel Flynn.
Oh,
Leroy Emmanuel triple banger. Flynn.
Triptych.
Apart from Pat Paddle, that's the best time we've had on the whole show.
Leroy Emmanuel Flynn. Nelson, New Zealand. All right, yeah, so it's Leroy Emmanuel, and I'm gonna give you a run-up, Jess, and you're going to give me the... Don't think. Blank your mind. Let's just see what
it's
happens.
It's already
here.
Pretty blank.
Leroy Emmanuel Flynn and the giant...
Banana.
Wow, she got a run-up for that.
Banana.
Man, he's going to have potassium for days. Lucky bastard. Well done, Leroy.
Enjoy,
Roy.
Thanks so much for the support, Leroy and John, my two favourites this week.
I'd like to thank a couple of my own favourites.
Mm.
All the way from incredible place name coming up, Broken Arrow, Oklahoma.
Oh, fuck yeah, that's good.
That's really cool. I'd like to thank Robert Cimenti.
Robert Cimenti.
Oh, that's the names today have been great.
Very good names. Robert Cimenti and the giant
crispy chicken sub.
Oh, okay. And banana was dumb.
Robert
He kept chasing like crispy little bit more
chicken sub, because you can't just have crispy chicken. It's got to be in something.
I haven't finished yet. No, I'm done. Robert Cimenti and the giant chicken sub. Crispy chicken sub.
Great.
Thanks, Robert. We appreciate you listening in bloody Broken Arrow, Oklahoma.
I wonder if... Because Broken Arrow is the name of a 90s film starring John Travolta and Christian Slater.
Is it?
I wonder if that is where he lives, in a 90s action film.
I think so. I think we can safely assume that.
Robert Cimenti in the giant 90s action film. That's way better.
There it is.
Very, very cool. And I've got one final person to thank this week. And they are from Manchester.
Manchester?
Manchester.
Okay.
And that is Jack Marshland.
Marshland. Ooh, okay, Marshland. Matt, this is you. Ready? I'm giving you a run-up.
I think that's Marsland.
I think
reading over
may,
your shoulder
it
there.
It may have auto-corrected. I do apologize. What we do is we write down each of your names at the start, and it didn't recognize Marsland as a word, so it was
Marsland.
Like, did you mean Marshland? So I'm going to say Jack Marsland and the giant Marshland. Very confusing.
Oh, that's very good.
But that was Matt's go. God, you're selfish, Dave.
Look, I came
Fuck
up...
Fuck you!
If you come up with giant crispy chicken strip sub, whatever I said, then you deserve a second go. It's carryover champ, and I won.
You deserve a second go because you fucked the first one.
I begged for a second go off mic. I said to Matt, please,
please
let me do that. And thank you, Jack Marsland and the giant Marshland.
Well, it's unfortunate because I'd really blanked my mind. I was ready to say something.
That takes a lot of mindfulness.
It does take a lot of mindfulness. I'm really mindful right now. Dave, but you filled it with Marshland.
Sorry. Jess Perkins and the giant...
Deesh.
Fuck is a
dish. I'm gonna have to Google it because that came from somewhere right inside my brain. How would you spell that?
D-E-E-S-H. Jess Perkins and the giant dish.
Just his face too. It was just like, oh no.
It was like dish. What am I saying?
All right, there's an Urban Dictionary.
Ooh,
this will not be good.
Deesh.
It's always sexual.
It's always sexual at Urban Dictionary.
Oh, no, this is good. Oh, this is...
What's a dish?
Just very apt.
Dish.
Dish.
This is so Jess. To do yo damn thang, no matter what anybody else says or does. To be true to yourself because nobody else can.
I do that in a giant way.
That is your dish. You are a dish.
Am I a dish?
You're a giant dish.
I'm absolutely not a dish.
Oh, there's a second one.
Dish bag.
A word used to substitute any other word you want or used to cut somebody off. Other forms. Disha, dishified, dishinify, got damn dish, etc.
I hate everything you're saying.
That's no good, right? First one was good. There's an example here. Man, I was dishing at Mr. Simpson, right? When this one chick was talking about she was trying to slide on me one time and dish.
Oh, that's what it means.
That definition was from 2009.
A good year.
Isn't time changed? Time's changed.
In a way.
I was trying to slide up and I was like, what the D? Is that what it was?
Yeah. The second one just means any word.
Any word, which is what we will. Jess and the giant, anything is what we're looking for.
She's very lonely. She'll take giant anything.
Jess Perkins and the giant to do your damn thing, no matter what anybody else says or does, to be true to yourself because no one else can.
No one else can.
What a story that is.
Mm. You go.
Dish.
You go, girl. You get your dish on.
Holy shit. It's late. We've
got to tell you, if you want to get in contact with this show, do so at any time to suggest a topic. Via email, dogoonpod@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @dogoonpod. And, of course, the aforementioned Patreon. If you want to get the bonus episode this month, it's coming up soon. Patreon.com/dogoonpod for that. All right, we've got to go. Thank you so much, guys. We'll see you next week. Until then, I will say goodbye.
Later.
Bye.
This is flying past the mic.
Nah, see ya.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Hello!
A pleasure to make your acquaintance.
Is that Mrs. Doubtfire?
Hello!
It's always Mrs. Doubtfire.
You've got two gears. Neutral.
One, neutral
and Mrs. Doubtfire.
And doubt. Put it in doubt.
Hello!
Is neutral a gear? Anyway.
God, imagine Matt as a primary school teacher.
Look here, kiddies, you better bloody listen up.
Broden?
No, Broden, sorry. Did you say imagine Broden as a...
Yeah.
I always imagined Broden as a primary school teacher.
And I think it would sound a little something. I like that.
Broden from the Arnie Donner podcast, another Planet Broadcast.
Now, hang on, you bloody kids with their bloody noisy boots.
Is Broden, is he big enough of a superstar now that we probably don't even need to...
He's like Cher.
Yeah.
He's just Broden. How many other Brodens do you know?
But in the world of celebrity voice impersonations, it goes Michael Caine, then Broden Kelly. They're the two go-to.
Hey, can you... All right, I want to hear you guys. Just very quickly, before we really piss off everyone listening, especially for the first time. Dave as Michael Caine, meeting Jess as Broden Kelly.
Hello, Broden. I'm Michael Caine.
Oh, bloody hello, Michael Caine. I like your movies. I'm Broden Kelly.
A pleasure, sir. I'm Michael Caine.
I do my little skits and riddles and I play an angry man, but on the inside I'm a nice man.
And I've won 2 Academy Awards.
Dave, are you Michael Caine or Tiny Tim? What day is it today?
He's also looking off into the middle distance.
I was in that film, sir.
A Very Muppets Christmas.
Yeah, that was Michael Caine's Scrooge, remember that?
Yeah,
very
do you remember? Good. Of course I remember his finest work.
I'm putting that little bit in at the end of the episode. I promised someone a secret track at the end, and that is going in.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall.
Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.